everyone, and welcome to the JW Show. I'm your host, Joshua Washington, Executive Director of the Institute for Black Solidarity with Israel. And today I have with me Klaas Mokomole. Klaas is one of the founders and the head coordinator of Africans for Peace, and is based in South Africa. Klaas does amazing work fighting boycott, divestment, and sanctions against Israel. He does other work as well in South Africa, and we're going to get into that today. Klaas, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. So first thing, Klaas, one of the questions I have for you, I know I think you get all the time, and that is, you know, you are a Black South African, born and raised in South Africa, and you are involved in this work that advocates for Israel. But before that, you used to actually advocate against the state of Israel. Can you tell us what that was? You used to be a part of the boycott, divestment, and sanction movement. Why were you a part of that movement?
Okay. The only way I can answer this question is actually to give you my background so that you can get the context right.
Absolutely.
So I've been part of politics from a very young age. I joined the African National Congress Youth League, which is the ANC Youth League, is the same organization that Nelson Mandela belongs to. I joined that organization at the age of 16. So I was still in high school at that time. I was an activist in my high school. So during my time in high school, I was part of the learners' representative, the student representative during that time. We call it RCL. Then it came a point where I had to do my grade 12, my matric. And after I finished my last grade in high school, I applied to go to Wits University. I went to Wits University to pursue my law degree. When I got to Wits, I continued with my activism. I continued with my activism because I've been active from my past life. So moving from Limpopo to the city of gold, Johannesburg, I continued my activism at Wits, Wits University. I joined a number of things when I was at Wits. I joined your law student council. I was part of the student government. We call it SRC here, Student Representative Council. In the States, we call it student government. During that period of student government, obviously, that's where I got exposed to BDS, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions. I didn't know much about BDS, and they came to us, they showed us videos of the young kids dying, and they were saying, look, Israelis are doing this to the Palestinians. So obviously, being a Black South African, I was touched by that because I felt like the Palestinians are going through the same thing my ancestors, my parents, and my grandparents went through. So during that time, I took it upon myself to make sure that I joined the BDS. I took it upon myself to make sure that I'm going to boycott and I'm going to sanction and divest against anything that is Israel-related. That's how I ended up joining the BDS at that time.
So what was it that... So that's where you were and that's what you did. And what was it now that made the switch for you from where you were then to being a very strong voice in South Africa in support of Israel?
So there are a number of things that came into play. So because as an activist, especially in South Africa, when you're an activist, you put a lot of things at stake. You put a lot of things in your life on the line. For example, when you're an activist, if there's something that is happening on campus, you might end up bunking and skipping lectures to make sure that you go to the picket lines and you chant and you are marching or you are protesting or you're boycotting, a number of things. So there was a point where in the year 2013, an Israeli-born pianist came to perform on our campus. So when that pianist came to perform on our campus, what we did as the student government at the time, we saw that, look, this Zionist, the South African Union of Jewish Students, were bringing that guy to come perform on our campus together with the South African Zionist Federation. As part of the student government, we were like, look, these Zionists are bringing an Israeli person to come perform on our campus. They're bringing, we said, look, they're bringing a Zionist to perform on our campus. So we defined Zionism as racism. We said, look, they're bringing a Zionist to come perform on our campus, and we're not going to allow a racist person to come perform on our campus. So what we did is that we rallied around campus. We brought all the students that were interested in the whole international issue. We made sure that we bring the students, and we went and disrupted that event. So we went to disrupt the event, and obviously after disrupting the event, we were successful in disrupting the event. They tried to bring a campus security to sort of stop us, but they couldn't really stop us. And then we got charged by the university. The university charged us because they believed that we exceeded the bounds of protest. They said we disrupted the event of other students that have a right to actually host events on campus. So what happened is that we got charged by the university, and I had to attend a disciplinary hearing. The disciplinary hearing took like 8 months. So I attended the disciplinary hearing, and later on, after attending the disciplinary hearing, I was found guilty. So I was facing expulsion from the university because of all the activism that I've been doing, because of the work I've done. Then it was at that period where I started asking myself a number of questions, because I feel like, look, I've attended this, I've been doing this, but how much do I know about Israel? So I realized actually that I don't know much about the things that are happening in the Middle East. Then at that time, I took it upon myself to actually research. I spoke to young people on the ground, on campus, even off campus. I spoke to young leaders on the ground. I started asking a number of questions about the conflict itself, only to realize that people had different views, because I spoke to all the parties, parties from the left, parties from the right, making sure that they can actually give me the sort of the understanding of the conflict itself. But people gave me something different. People moved to a political debate. Some were saying, no, it's a religious conflict. No, some people are settlers. You know, stuff like that. Right. And I realized, actually, I'm not getting help from this. And I started reading a number of books written by different parties, like Omar Bogwati, Surya Dadu. Then those were BDS books. Then I read books by the pro-Israel guys, like Benjamin Pogrin, and a number of books that actually could actually settle it down. But still, these books didn't really help me. Then it was at that time I realized that actually this is not helping me. So then in the year 2015, there was a trip, an educational trip that was advertised for students to go to Israel to go learn about the conflict. And I applied for that educational trip. I went to Israel to learn about the trip. It took us 8 days actually in Israel. So going to Israel actually, that's what changed my mind. Like, so that's what may actually expose me to the real things on the ground. Obviously, what happened is that we traveled the whole of Israel. We started from like your Nazareth in the top, went down to like your Jerusalem, like went all over your Haifa, Tel Aviv, even went to Ramallah, Rawabi, went to like Bethlehem. But my turning point was when I was in Sderot. Because when I was in Sderot, that's when I saw that Sderot is in the south, right next to Gaza. That's where I saw the rockets that Hamas will fire with messages, man-made rockets, actually, the rockets that will fail and end up in Sderot. So that's when I realized actually that BDS is not telling me the truth. BDS is lying. BDS is not giving me the full story about the whole thing. Because BDS never told me that Hamas will fire a rocket from a school or fire a rocket from a populated, highly populated, dense area or an apartment or a hospital or anywhere where they feel like firing a rocket, they'll fire a rocket. I mean, Hamas will fire a rocket from that. But they never told me that. They only told me that IDF fires rockets back to Gaza. And I feel like if you actually were interested in solving a thing, or whether it's a war, you want to be a mediator in a war, you need to be balancing your views. You need to be telling the truth. You can't just show one side of the story. So I felt like BDS was only showing me one side of the story, and they were actually misleading me. That's why I changed my mind. Then after that, that's when I came back to South Africa to sort of engage with young people on the ground. That's when I started coming to South Africa. I spoke to young people on the ground and started actually showing them the reality, started explaining to them, started educating them. I started debating with young people that were part of the BDS, started showing them the realities, and it continued like that. So I started being a voice from that angle.
Wow. And what year was that you got back from Israel?
So it was in the year 2015. We went I remember it was summer that side. We went in July. It was really nice going that side as well, because we learned a number of things. And when I went that side, just to put it on record, I was still a member of BDS. And I only changed my mind when I was that side, because I went there to find apartheid. I went there to see what apartheid is. And when I got there, I expected to see what our parents and our grandparents went through in South Africa. And I realized actually there's no such a thing as apartheid, because our parents didn't go through this. This is actually an insult to our parents when they call this apartheid.
Right. And and then what was it from 2015 to when you and two others founded Africans for Peace? How long, what time period was that? What year did you guys found Africans for Peace?
So 2015, I came back. I was just, what I did 2015, I didn't have a structure. So I was just like, obviously I came back from Israel. I would just say, wait on campus too for these BDS guys or the Palestinian student solidarity on campuses to host events. And I'll go there alone, or I'll call my friends to go there and sort of ask questions. And we start debating. Instead of discussing, these guys will start to shout at us. Right. And we call us, no, you are sellouts. What you did by going there, your trip was funding, stuff like that. Then we'll start debating these guys. We started sort of fighting them on campus. And only to realize that actually this is not helpful. So we need to find a structure. We need, if we really want to educate the population in South Africa, we need to find a structure. Then we found the structure in 2016. That's when we actually formed Africans for Peace. And we sort of came up with ideas on how we're going to run Africans for Peace and how we're going to educate the South African public.
Wow. And so you already touched on it, but when it comes to Africans for Peace, what why is something like Africans for Peace needed in South Africa?
So Africans for Peace, it's an organization of young scholars and young activists. The aim of Africans for Peace is sort of to deal with the issues that are happening in the world, the wars that are faced in Africa and all over the world. Because we believe in a peaceful nation. We believe in a peaceful world. We believe that anything that is happening anywhere in the world can actually impact on our lives, even when we are in South Africa. So we feel like we're taking upon a role to sort of bring about solutions. So South Africa needs Africans for Peace because they need something that's going to educate them. With Africans for Peace, what we do is that we write articles. We do discussions, we host webinars, we do a number of things. We do tours to the UK, we do tours to the States as well, university campuses where we educate the young people in the States, even in South Africa. South Africa needs Africans for Peace because we bridge that gap of information. We give them a balanced view. We give them information that is not diluted. We give them the raw information, because we sort of authenticate our information. We go there and educate them. With our articles that we write, we give them the raw information, that educative information. With the discussion that we host, or the webinars that we host, we give them proper information that actually they can benefit at the end of the day.
And that's incredible. And class, So you talked about how being on the ground before you started Africans for Peace found was difficult, because it often would turn into, you know, big shouting matches and things like that. How is Africans for Peace as a structure, how is that now received amongst Black South Africans? What are you seeing now? Is there a change now than before?
So, you see, before, being in Africa for Peace actually allowed us to get proper platforms. In the past, we couldn't get a proper platform. For example, we'll just go to events on campuses, and those events were sort of informal events, and those events were controlled because they'll be organized by the guys from that side. Now, with the vehicle of Africans for Peace, we are able to get to national TV, we are able to get to national radio, we are able to get to the national news outlets, whether it's a newspaper, print, or social, or online. Right. We also get to that. So when on national TV, we get to debate these guys under the banner of Africans for Peace. And obviously, Africans for Peace is already known because of the booklet that we wrote. We wrote a booklet about Africa, and recently, where we're discussing the issues that are taking place in Africa and how Africa needs young leaders to come forward and sort of save it. So I think I suggest that the listeners should actually download the booklet from our website, www.africansforpeace.com. And also we wrote a book about issues, the Israel, so the issues that are happening in Israel. The number of things that we discuss in that booklet, our personal stories, what apartheid was, how the anti-Israel movements are hijacking this. So because of this vehicle, we're able to publish books, we're able to publish articles, we're able to get to debate with a number of people online.
That's incredible. Tell us, Klaas, when it comes to, you spoke a little bit on how you went to Israel to find what BDS was calling apartheid. What are some of the other, so in addition to apartheid, what are some of the other comparisons that they make to South Africa, and can you break down for us why those aren't true, like you were saying?
So there are a number of things that BDS loves doing. Obviously, they hijack the narrative of apartheid. That's why whenever we are going all over the states, we go with the title that we are reclaiming our narrative, because the apartheid narrative has been stolen and has been abused out there. So, for example, they will say the Arabs are not allowed to be in the Knesset, in the Israel parliament. And they will say, no, it's the same thing that happened in South Africa during apartheid. Yes, in South Africa, blacks were not allowed. Like the AIDS was not allowed to be in the PAC, or the Pan-African National Congress was not allowed to be in the parliament of South Africa during apartheid. Yes, right. That was true. But you go to Israel, you'll be like, why? There are Arabs in the Knesset. I remember when we went to watch the Knesset the other time, went to the Knesset, and you saw an Arab guy debating when they're talking about the national state bill, where they're talking about the flag and the national anthem, a number of things. So we saw these things, and like, but these guys are lying. You see, like this was the recent now when we went back to Israel in 2018. But obviously before, they told us, look, I remember this was like 2014 and 2015, when BDS was like, look, Arabs are not allowed to share universities and schools with the Jews in Israel. And we're shocked that actually this guy, the founder of BDS himself, actually went to Tel Aviv University. What is it that he's talking about? Because saying they're not allowed, you see? Wow. Because obviously in South Africa, blacks and whites were not allowed to share the universities. And I'll go back and they'll say the Arabs and the Jews are not allowed to share clinics and hospitals. And you'll be like, how come? Because we go there, you get to a private hospital that is called Save a Child's Heart in the center of Tel Aviv. And that clinic's got Ethiopian Jews, it's got Arabs, it's got kids from Eritrea that have been treated there. And obviously in South Africa during that time, during apartheid time, the people were not allowed to share, like blacks were not allowed to use the white only hospitals and clinics. And then again, they will use a comparison that recently, even when I went to a debate, I think it was last year, 2020, where I was debating a BDS lady, she was saying, look, she was are not allowed to use the beach or to walk on the promenade in Tel Aviv, you see? And then she says, look, the Arabs are not allowed to use the beach in Tel Aviv. They can't use it. So there's a section for the Arabs and there's a section for the Jews. And I was like, but that's a lie. Obviously, she's taking that from the thing that used to happen in South Africa during apartheid. The blacks had their own section at the beach and the whites had their section at the beach. And like, obviously, that's a lie. The same thing with the bus system. They say, no, Arabs have their own buses. They sit at the back or they sit in front, or the Jews sit in a certain place. The number of things that Arabs are not allowed to marry Jews. And like, look, you can't use religious laws on this one. There are things that are happening. There are things that are not happening. So they realize that they're hijacking the whole narrative that people are doing this. And then they're controlling. The government is passing laws on this. And that's why we always go out there to sort of deal with these myths and to make sure that we discredit what the BDS is practicing out there.
Well, yeah, I remember I actually saw that debate, that panel debate that you were on last year.
Yeah,
it was you, an Israeli Arab, and then you guys were debating a, I assume the other guy was a Palestinian and a black South African woman that was there with you.
The guy was it's the founder of it's the head of BDS South Africa. That guy we're debating. Yeah. So that's why we're like, you can't be stating such things on national TV. You see, you can't allow that. So at least with African for Peace, we're able to sort of deal with such lies and sort of discredit these guys.
That's incredible. No, that was a really good segment. I'll make sure I have that link up there for our listeners to check out as well. That was very good. Klaas, you know, I appreciate you for sharing this stuff with us. I want to ask you a couple more questions. One is for Africans for Peace, what has been the biggest hurdle for you all, and what has been your biggest accomplishment as an organization?
Look, the hurdle will be the death threats. I've been getting death threats sometimes. People threaten me on my social media platforms or like Twitter. You know, Twitter can be volatile. People can just attack you there.
Yeah.
And obviously, people say, no, you sold out. We are going to necklace you because you're a sellout. So necklacing, it's similar to lynching in the States. So because like during apartheid, there were they were called sellouts. So in an African way, South African, we call them impimpis. So what the apartheid police would do, they will pay a black person in the townships, in the projects there, and they'll be like, look, whenever there are riots in the township, you must check who's starting the riots and who's leading the riots. And you inform us, and we're going to come and make sure that we arrest that person who started. So those blacks that were sort of informing the apartheid police, because they've been paid, whenever the community realized that this person was an informer or was a sellout, they will actually lynch them in the township. But the lynching in South Africa works differently, because they put a tire on the person, and they put paraffin or fuel or gas or diesel or anything, and they set them alight with fire, you know, stuff like that. So I got those kind of death threats and said, look, we are going to do this to you, stuff like that. But obviously I never stopped, because I'm not really a coward, so I can just tell them, look, you can where to back off and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But our biggest accomplishment is actually to make sure that the situation on campus, especially in South African campuses, is better now. Mm. We have managed to succeed in a number of spaces. So as a start, we managed to take more leaders to Israel to see it for themselves. In the past 4 years alone, we've managed to take more than 80 young activists that were part of the BDS in the past to go to Israel and learn about the conflict. And most of them, when they came back, they were changed. I can say safely 80% of them, when they came back, they were no longer supporting Israel and they were against Israel. And the other ones were just standing on the fence because they don't want to go publicly because they're scared for their lives. And also maybe because BDS were still funding them academically, they'll pay for their student fees, academic fees and stuff like that. That's one of the achievements that we've managed to do. Number two, obviously, we go to campuses and we educate these young leaders on campuses. Most of the students on campuses are no longer actively involved in the BDS. So they are out there sort of talking to us during like what we call the IAW, Israel Apartheid Week or Israel Awareness Week. They're no longer actively involved in the BDS. So it helps actually the students when we go there and we educate the students on the ground. And another thing that a success is that we recently at Wits University, we managed to get a Jewish student to be in the SRC, and that student ran with the ANC Youth League. So you see, we couldn't have done this in the past, where you have a Jewish person running for student government on campus and ending up winning. She actually got the second highest votes, you see, so to be in the student government. It's not easy to get it to be in the student government in South Africa because it's very politicized. You don't run independently easily. Most of the independent people who converse independently, they don't win. So you can only win normally when you run under a political party. So you have to run like under ANC or Democratic Alliance. Different from the States, actually, how it operates in South Africa. So recently we had one of the Jewish kids who is actually in the SRC now, in the student government in South Africa.
That's
one of the things. Yeah.
That's great. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Yeah. So that's one of the achievements that we managed to do. And also now with the achievement that we do, we go out in the communities. We don't just focus on campus. So we manage to go to the schools as well. We go to the schools and we educate these young kids about what's happening in Israel. So we manage to speak to these kids about the issues. We just tell the kids not to just fall for anything. We tell the learners and the students in the high schools to read more about the issues and to be aware of organizations such as BDS so that they don't just fall for the trap, but because such organizations are up to no good and they're out there just to sort of deal with their academics. And at the end of the day, when they get to universities, these kids, when they get there, they will be able to differentiate what is right and what is wrong, and they'll be able to choose the right path instead of the wrong path.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, and just to back up for a minute too, you said for the students that have, that you've taken to Israel, about 80% of them have come back, changed. Mm. They don't stand against Israel anymore. And then you said for some of the students, because BDS is actually paying their school fees and has kind of has them in their pocket, so to speak, there are some people who feel like they can't stand with Israel because of that. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah. So that's the case. So obviously, and I understand their cry. So I wouldn't expect them to just out there and sort of chant with us or sort of preach what we are preaching as Africans for Peace, because it's not easy. So I know fees are a problem in this country. See, so some students don't have fees and they end up being financially excluded from the universities. So we understand, but at least they will be standing on the fence and they won't be going all out there to chant and everything.
Right, right. Wow. That's important work. That's incredible work.
Yeah.
Klaas, I want to ask you this last question, I think, and I think it's appropriate now. You know, there's so much, especially, you know, in just in these past few weeks, we've seen another war break out between Israel and Gaza. And I don't know how big in South Africa, but here in the States, I think that the propaganda was as strong as it's ever been. A lot of lies being told about Israel, and you know, for you in South Africa now, doing what you do, there's obviously two fronts. There are the people who stand against Israel, and then there's a lot of South Africans who just have so many things to worry about in their own country, in their own towns, in their own neighborhoods, with their families and stuff. Why should South Africans support Israel?
Look, South Africa is a developing country. And as a developing country, we need to be in a space where we build relations. We build relationship with the countries that are innovative. We build relations with the countries that are economically advanced. We build relations with countries that are practicing the fourth and that are taking the path for the fourth industrial revolution. And it's only fitting and fair for South Africans to support Israel, because Israel is advanced. Israel can actually bring about solutions into South Africa. For example, we have a serious power problem in South Africa. We've normalized it, actually. We call it load shedding, where I can be in on a call with you now and there might be a national power cut. So there might be a power cut now where I won't be able to speak to you anymore until maybe the government will decide when to bring up power.
Wow.
They might bring it up after 2 or 3 hours. Sometimes it can take even 8 hours. Imagine 8 hours without power.
Wow.
You see, so and Israel can bring to this solution. Israel can bring a solution to this because of the technology that they have. We don't have load shedding in Israel. So these are the things that actually need to be solved. For example, I'm from the rural areas. I'm from the villages, like the dusty streets of South Africa, where you need to walk like at least 2 miles before you can actually get a tar road. You need to walk at least 3 miles before you can get your nearest clinic or a high school. So I'm from that kind of an environment. And we have water problems there. Israel can actually bring a solution to our water problem. And as South Africans, the poverty-stricken South African, we need Israel in our lives because they can actually bring about the solutions that we have. Like they can bring solutions to the problems that we have. Obviously, the electrical problem, the power cuts, the water solutions that we need. Like we have Innovation Africa that can bring about water where they can use solar to drain water.
Yeah.
They can bring, South Africa is not landlocked. So we can, the system of desalination of water, of sea water, so we can desalinate that water and use it in our houses. So there are a number of things that we need, like we, technology-wise, like, you know, the number of things. So we're dealing with the high crime rate in South Africa. So we need the technology to sort of help us to deal with this crime. There's either crime is high, and almost every minute someone's getting hijacked, someone's getting mugged on the street, or the shop is getting robbed. So we need technology to sort of solve these issues. You see, with the technology of like the Startup Nation, see where they made this Waze app, we can actually use the kind of technology to deal with these issues of crime, or deal with these issues that are affecting our daily lives. And this is going to solve our main problem, which is unemployment. Recently, the stats shows that 34% of the graduates in South Africa are unemployed, and almost 68%, actually 72% of the youth of South Africa are unemployed. So if we solve these issues and bring Israel to South Africa and they help us start our own startup nation here, help us be innovative, we can actually solve the unemployment issues that we are faced with. We can actually help the whole country with this, because it's going to be an investment in the country itself. It's going to be a beneficial to the government and the citizens of this country.
Wow. Klaas, thank you so much. Thank you so much for taking the time out here and sharing. I know our listeners really appreciate this. And how is there a way that we can follow you guys or support Africans for Peace? We want to, you know, stay up to date on the work that you're doing.
I beg your pardon, please repeat that statement.
Yeah. Is there a way that we can follow Africans for Peace or support you all? We want to just stay up to date on what you're doing and follow your progress.
Oh yeah. So we have a website. So we are on social media. We are on Twitter. We are on Facebook. We have our website. We post most of our content on our website, www.africansforpeace.com. I feel like people can actually check out our stuff there. And also, because of the work that we do, whenever we come to the States, we're also going to be posting there. Or if an organization that wants to host us, whether it's a webinar, we are free to do webinars with them. They can actually tell us, we can do any topic that we want, whether we want to learn about Africa, we want to learn about Israel, we actually do webinars with them. And yeah, there are a number of things that we do. So, but most of the content, we post them on our social media, Facebook, and our website, www.africansforpeace.com.
Awesome. www.africansforpeace.com. Klaas, thank you so much, sir. We wish you all the best in what you're doing and your efforts. Thank you for being here with us.
Thank you so much.
And thank you all for listening again. My name is Joshua Washington, Executive Director of the Institute for Black Solidarity with Israel, and I'm signing off.